Dede has the detail.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto stated that Indonesia and Vietnam not only share the same values and history in fighting imperialism and colonialism, but also the same vision of becoming a developed country in 2045 in the two countries' 100th anniversary of independence. This was conveyed by the head of state when delivering a joint statement with Secretary General of the Communist Party of Vietnam, Tho Lam, at the Merdeka Palace, Jakarta, Monday. On the occasion, President Prabowo emphasized that Indonesia and Vietnam agreed to enhance their partnership into a comprehensive strategic partnership.
Kita sudah setuju dalam pertemuan kita.
In our meeting, we have agreed that we want to improve our relationship, cooperation. We want to improve our relationship into a comprehensive strategic partnership. And we really want to strengthen and cooperate in almost all fields, political field, economy, defense and security, the populace, exchange of visits in the field of education and science, almost all fields. We want to increase cooperation and do something, if possible, a good economic integration.
President Prabowo further explained that Indonesia and Vietnam agreed to establish bilateral economic cooperation with a target of $18 billion by 2028. The president also welcomed Vietnam investment in Indonesia in the automotive sector, agriculture, and in various other fields. According to the president, this cooperation will help both countries improve food security and can even make Indonesia and Vietnam become world food contributors. Secretary General of the Communist Party of Vietnam, Tho Lam, and his wife, Ngo Phung Ly, visited Indonesia on March 9-11, 2025, for a state visit, which also coincides with the 70th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Indonesia and Vietnam. Tho Lam was welcomed with a state ceremony at Merdeka Palace by President Prabowo on Monday afternoon. The two leaders then held a bilateral meeting. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto urges app-based transportation companies to allow bonuses ahead of the Islamic Eid celebration. The story by Rama Shidki.
Indonesian President Prabowo Subianto has urged online transportation companies to provide religious holiday allowances for the Islamic feast day of Eid al-Fitr in late March. The bonus will impact drivers and courier partners of those companies, with Prabowo estimating the number to be up to 250,000 full-time drivers and 1.5 million part-time drivers. In a press conference in Jakarta on Monday, March 10, Prabowo said that online drivers contribute to supporting the mobility of people and goods in Indonesia.
Pada tahun ini, pemerintah menaruh perhatian khusus kepada para pengemudi dan kurir online.
This year, the government is paying special attention to online drivers and couriers who have made significant contributions in supporting transportation and logistics services in Indonesia. Therefore, the government urges all app-based transportation service companies to provide holiday bonuses in cash to online drivers and couriers, considering their work performances.
Kepada pengemudi dan kurir online, dalam bentuk uang tunai dengan mempertimbangkan keaktifan kerja.
Prabowo also urged that holiday allowances be given to all workers no later than 7 days before Eid al-Fitr, and the Ministry of Manpower will provide the details. He thanked Indonesia's two largest online transportation companies, local company Gojek and Singapore-based Grab, for their willingness to give these bonuses. With about 85% of Indonesia's population being Muslim, the religious holiday allowances, a worker's entitlement in Indonesia, are highly anticipated ahead of Eid season. Ramasitki Pratama reporting for Voice of Indonesia.
The Ministry of Creative Economy supports the implementation of free nutritious meal program by providing cooking training and developing locally based menus. Dora Pardede has the detail.
Indonesian Minister of Creative Economy Tuku Rifki Harsha emphasized the importance of cooperation between the Ministry of Creative Economy and the National Nutrition Agency in strengthening the creative economy sector. This was conveyed by Rifki during a meeting with the agency in Jakarta Monday. Rifki stated that his ministry is ready to collaborate on the free nutritious meal program, especially in cooking training and developing local-based menus. In addition, the Ministry of Creative Economy will provide professional chefs to train cooks involved in the program.
Kami juga sangat dekat dengan asosiasi kuliner termasuk.
We are also very close to the Culinary Association, including MasterChef, chefs. Some cooperate with MNC, some cooperate with others. But here, if training cooks for the diversity and variety of dishes at cooking posts are needed, maybe we can support that.
Itu juga kami bisa mendukung.
Meanwhile, the head of the National Nutrition Agency, Dadan Hindayana, welcomed this collaboration. He considers that the collaboration with the Ministry of Creative Economy will open up opportunities for training cooks and developing local-based menus, which contribute to creating delicious and nutritious food. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Indonesian Ambassador to Slovakia, Pribadi Setiono, said Ramadan is an important momentum in encouraging introduction of Islam to the local community. The story by Andy Romdori.
Indonesian Ambassador to Slovakia, Pribadi Setiono, Tuesday said that Ramadan is an important momentum in encouraging the introduction of Islam to the local community. He explained that this year the Slovak Ministry of Foreign Affairs has sent an invitation to attend a breaking of the fast together. In the event, Indonesia will be given the opportunity to share its Ramadan experience in Indonesia. In the VoiTalk program with Voice of Indonesia RRI World Service, Ambassador Pribadi Sutiono explained that this effort shows the Slovak government's recognition of Islam. Although Islam is the minority, people in Slovakia have begun to open up to Islam.
This year is a bit special for us, for Indonesian, also the Muslim communities in Slovakia, since the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Slovakia now having today is going to have a iftar among the Organization of Islamic Cooperation or members countries. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is that Indonesia will be the kind of a persons who've been asked by the government of Slovakia to explain about Ramadan in Indonesia, for example, to all the audience later on today. Well, this is a very good opportunity. I mean, it also means that the government of Slovakia is starting to recognize more on Muslim and Islam world in Slovakia, which is a very, very positive way of Slovakian government think about it. In the level of the people itself, I mean, the people of Slovakia is now becoming more open and open on the, you know, Muslim in Slovakia. Even that we are a very tiny in number, around 0.1% of the population.
Meanwhile, regarding bilateral cooperation, Ambassador Pribadi Sutiono explained that Indonesia is exploring opportunities for halal trade cooperation with Slovakia. According to him, the 13th Vice President of the Republic of Indonesia, Ma'ruf Amin, visited Slovakia in 2023 to explore this opportunity. Pribadi Sutiono explained that this effort was welcomed by the Slovak government, which admitted that it was interested in finding out more about opportunities for halal industry cooperation with Indonesia. Andi Ramdoni reporting.
Listener, you're still on highlights of the week. President Prabowo Subianto has outlined various policies for Ramadan and the Fitr 2025, including holiday allowance and the 13th month salary for 9.3 million public servants. More detail by Dora Pardidi.
Recognizing the high levels of mobility and increased consumption during Ramadan and the Eid al-Fitr holiday in 2025, the Indonesian government has introduced a series of policies to assist the public. This was announced by President Prabowo Subianto at the Merdeka Village in Jakarta on Tuesday. Prabowo revealed that one of the measures is the provision of the holiday allowance and the 13th month salary for 9.4 million civil servants, including state civil apparatus, government employees with work agreements, judges, soldiers from the Indonesian National Army, the police, and retirees, as outlined in Government Regulation Number 11 of 2025. The President expressed hope that these policies will help the public manage their needs during the homecoming and the Eid al-Fitr holiday.
I hope that this policy can help manage needs during the homecoming and especially during Eid holiday.
President Prabowo further explained that the amount of the holiday allowance and 13th month salary for state employees will cover their basic salary, inherent allowances, and performance allowances, all of which will be given at 100% for central government civil servant, TNI Polri personnel, and judges. For regional government employees, the benefit will follow the same structure as the central government, but will be adjusted according to the fiscal capacity of each region. The President also mentioned that the holiday allowance for government employees will be disbursed 2 weeks before Eid al-Fitr starting on Monday, March 17, 2025. Previously, the government had introduced several additional policies, including a reduction in airfare prices by 13-14% for the 2 weeks of the Eid al-Fitr holiday, discount on toll road fees and transportation fares during the mudik period, as well as holiday allowances. For private sector employees, state-owned enterprises, regional-owned enterprises, and holiday bonuses for online driver and couriers. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the World.
The Financial Services Authority of Indonesia stops thousands of illegal financial entities. The story by Ofra.
The head of the Financial Services Business Behavior Supervision, Education and Consumer Protection at the Financial Services Authority of Indonesia, Frederica Widyasari Dewi, on Tuesday announced that the task force for eradicating illegal financial activities has shut down over 4,000 illegal entities across various websites and applications between January 1, 2024 and February 28, 2025. This action was taken in response to over 17,000 public complaints about illegal investments and online loans.
Di Satgas Pasti ini, from January 1 to February 28, we have identified and shut down 4,036 illegal financial entities, including 3,517 illegal online lending platforms and 519 illegal investment offers which could harm the public.
Frederica also noted that the Financial Services Authority of Indonesia has blocked more than 100 bank accounts used for illegal transactions and over 1,300 phone numbers or WhatsApp accounts. These measures demonstrate the government's commitment to eradicating harmful illegal financial practices. The authority continues to urge the public to be cautious of unregistered and unlicensed investment offers and online loans.
President Prabowo Subianto expressed his support for the efforts of Pandawara Group in addressing environmental issues. Rano has the detail.
President Prabowo Subianto received a visit from Pandawara Group at the Merdeka Palace in Jakarta on Tuesday. Following the meeting, one of the Pandawara members, Gilang, shared with the media that President Prabowo encouraged the group to remain committed and stay motivated in carrying out their mission.
We shared a bit about what we've experienced in the field. He appreciated the steps we've taken and the small actions we've made so far. The President specifically told us to keep moving forward and stay committed. That's the most important thing. He also reminded us not to get tired no matter what challenges we may face in the future.
During the discussion, Pandawara Group highlighted serious challenges they faced, including difficulties in obtaining permits for waste removal from rivers and addressing environmental issues like the recent severe flooding in the Greater Jakarta area. Going forward, they aim to expand their movement nationally by involving more young people in environmental actions and inspiring future generations to be more environmentally conscious.
The Indonesian national football team will face the Australian national football team in 2026 World Cup qualifiers. Football commentator Kusnaini hopes the team plays calmly without being burdened by public expectation. Andy Rondoni has more.
The Indonesian national football team is set to play against Australia in the 2026 World Cup Group C qualifiers on March 20th, followed by a match against Bahrain in Jakarta on March 25th. Head coach Patrick Kluivert has announced a provisional squad for these crucial matches, which will determine Indonesia's fate in the tournament. The squad includes three newly naturalized players who took the oath of Indonesian citizenship on March 10th. They are Emil Audero Mulyadi, Dean James, and Joy Pelupesi. Football observer Kusnaini hopes the team will not be overwhelmed by the high public expectations for victories over both Australia and Bahrain. Speaking on the Void Talk program with RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta on Wednesday, Kusnaini expressed his hope that the Indonesian team can stay calm and not be pressured by the four-point target set by the Indonesian Football Association or by the expectation of the public.
Just focus on the match against Australia and then Bahrain in Indonesia. Don't be burdened by the four-point target from PSSI or the public's expectation being too high. Just enjoy the game.
The match against Australia will mark Patrick Kluivert's first match as head coach of the Indonesian national football team since his appointment in January. Indonesia remains in contention for its first ever World Cup appearance in the modern era following a historic victory over Saudi Arabia in their latest Group C match. This win has kept the nation's hope alive for securing second place, which guarantees a spot in the final qualification round. Andy Ramdoni reporting.
And listener, that's Haidar Abduik by Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
RRI Digital with New Look. Various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as live comments and share, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Now, in conjunction with the National Music Day on March the 9th, here is the VOA talk about bringing our music to the next level. We are talking about how to improve Indonesian so-called traditional music.
Voice of Indonesia.
And then we'll serve Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. Listener, March the 9th is the National Music Day of Indonesia. And today, we are going to talk about how to bring Indonesian music to the next level. And also, you see in a video recent, we just played, it's about the upcoming music event that you shouldn't miss. And to talk more about the two of them, we are connected via Zoom, expert in culture, Mas Frankie Redden. Good morning, Mas Frankie.
Good morning, everyone. How's it going?
It's nice. And how about you?
Yeah, fasting is smooth so far. It's a fasting month, right?
Yeah.
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I wish everybody...
Happy fasting to everyone.
Happy fasting for everyone. Okay, Mas Frankie, I would like to know, today we are going to talk about how to bring Indonesian music to the next level. But
yes.
There are certainly a lot of area to cover, but what
yes.
is our current biggest anchor today?
Wow, that's a very big topic. I can write a dissertation for that issue. Yeah, actually, of course, many. Yeah? But there are two basic things, basically. First is, of course, in the local context, well, we need for support for like traditional music, especially indigenous music, let's put it that way. Because, of course, the world is changing. Yeah, you can no longer keep even your indigenous culture intact, yeah, as it is before. Yeah. Of course, now that we have to accept that. But still, we need to put as much as effort. Yeah? I mean, every one of us, we still want to have like our own cultural identity, yeah? To preserve that, yeah? And to not only preserve, but preserving doesn't mean you put it in a museum and then that's all. No, preserving means that you have to, you have to use it and practice in daily practice. Yeah. Also, that's also related to music. That's one thing. The second thing, nowadays when we talk, we're talking in the music context, yeah, today, in this at this very moment, this is the era of what so-called creative economy, where music has a big part of it as a product. Yeah, I mean, through music you can gain a lot of revenue, and individually as a musician you can gain a lot. I mean, you can survive, not only survive, you can be as good as a musician, a professional musician. And if you're thinking about economic, you can gain a lot of economic gain basically through music and traditional music also. Yeah. Now, because why I said that is because there is a huge market out there, unfortunately not yet in Indonesia, but in the global scale, of course mainly in the Western hemisphere, but now it's also covering Asian continent also. The huge market about what's so called, of course they don't use the term traditional music, they use the term world music. Yeah. If I count it over like $6.5 billion, the market share, the money that circulate for traditional music only, yeah, in the whole world, of course. Now that's the challenge. We have to be able to reach that market also in order to, let's say, sustain our traditional music, our music. That's basically two things. Yeah.
Okay, so I got two keywords. The first one is about keeping it as our identity as part of our daily life, and the other one is talking about the market share, how we penetrate it. So let's talk about it one by one. Let's go with the identity one. How do you see the current situation related to our traditional music? You mentioned that it sounds like it's not real part of our identity nowadays.
Yes.
Although it is. So
yes.
So how do you see it?
Yeah. Comparing to, I've been living by now, I've been developing my career for 50 pretty long years, right? So that's, let me try a little bit from historical point of view. When I was young, let's say when I was a student, when I was still developing my career, traditional music wasn't count that much. Yeah? The government also didn't put enough effort to not only to preserve but to maintain, yeah, to nurture traditional music. Yeah. That one, because the awareness wasn't really there. Yeah. But nowadays, yeah, especially now, today as we speak, we have all the necessary ministry. This is, I'm trying to say from the government point of view. Yeah. We have the RRE is one of them, of course. You know, RRE has been there for a long time, and always the main task, as I understood, is preserving and nurturing traditional indigenous music everywhere, not only in Jakarta, because RRE is a state-owned radio, right? So this is thanks to RRE, one thing. And TPRE supposedly also do the same thing, although in the urban setting, not so much. But if you go to a local state on television, they're still basically doing traditional culture, performing as one of the programs. And also, don't forget, there are many, like, you know, private TV station. They are also doing that same thing. Now, we're talking in the state level. We have what's so called Ministry of Culture now. That's really a breakthrough. After 79 years, long years, we got our independence. This is the first regime that has that awareness to have our Ministry of Culture. That's actually already been mentioned since even before we got independent by Ki Hajar Dewantoro. We should have Ministry of Culture. Yeah. By the time, even before this nation state was founded, they already have huge concern about Indonesian culture because we are so rich. Now, then we have another ministry that's also very crucial. It's the Ministry of Creative Economy. This is a ministry level, not badan, but a ministry level. No other country, not many countries that really have those two very important ministries. Yeah? Basically, mostly all countries, they combine with Ministry of Creative Economy, with sport, with culture, with tourism. So that's so, I mean, in my opinion, it's a bit complicated. Now we have specifically ministry for that. What else do we need? There is, of course, tourism. And don't forget, in the provincial level, in the city level, we also have dinas. Yeah? Dinas, let's say, I'm talking now, for instance, I'm in Jakarta. So Jakarta, Tourism and Creative Economy Board. Yeah? Jakarta is a big, of course, there used to be capital. Yeah? It's a big, what do you call that? It's a big city. So we have this, the institution, which is so crucial. And yet, of course, there is also, basically in the similar, different level, we have in the Kabupaten, yeah, in the region, in the regency, in the city, in the wali kota. So we have all the necessary, from government perspective, all the necessary tools to preserve, to nurture, and to develop, develop our traditional culture, traditional music in this way, as a product for export. That's all.
Okay, so product for export. And still talking about the identity itself, of course, we cannot only talk about the government or the agencies level, but also in the grassroots level.
Yeah.
I mean, since I was little too, if I can tell you a story, that a lot of people says that our traditional music gets replaced by the new one because of music from abroad. But now, but since I was little, I mean, you also mentioned that so many years ago, not all people play the traditional music in a daily basis. Is it is it one of the problem too? And if it is also the problem, where can we improve that?
That's a very that's a very big issue. Yeah, of course we are expecting those whose ancestor invented this particular so-called tradition. Supposedly taking care of what they inherited from their ancestors. Yeah? That's one thing. That's really, of course, there is no law for that, but that's an obligation. It's a moral obligation. We have to maintain what we got from our great grandfather. Yeah, because it's not easy for them to create that. Yeah, that's one thing. But of course, the daily challenge in our social life is also big, very big. Yeah, and also, don't forget, we are a post-colonial country, meaning we have been colonized for many, many years, right? So, the colonizer come from the West, right? And they brought their culture, they brought their cultural system, not culture. Culture is a product, but cultural system, basically what you're doing in your daily life. So, we are already very much dominated by so-called Western culture living today. Yeah? That's called cultural hegemonic. Yeah? Now, because of that, there is no way we can avoid it, you know. Sometimes we forgot that we are Indonesian. Sometimes we think we are like the same, like American, European. No, we're not the same, yeah. But in the daily life, sometimes all the modern, what so-called quote-unquote modern facility, make us forget that we are not European or American. We're still Indonesian no matter what. Now, this is this awareness that need to be, what do you call that, need to be reminded by our government. That's why, not that, okay, this is your responsibility. Yeah, of course, but we need to be reminded all the time. Now, that's why we organize, cultural festival. I'm trying to organize, World Music Festival with DKI, the Dinas Kebudayaan Ekonomi Kreatif. Yeah. This is actually a reminder. Yeah. Of course, we are promoting, we are preserving, but I also want to remind people, hey, we still have this. Don't forget. And this is part of our lives. You cannot ignore this. Of course, you can live K-pop. It's okay. I don't mind. You love whatever you love. You love jazz, you love rock, metal, even K-pop. It's okay. But don't forget, we also have this. This is also part of us. That's why the obligation is, I mean, the government actually has obligation, but the obligation is to remind us, to remind the common people that we still have this. That's the most important.
Okay, so we got the need a reminder and also remind ourselves that traditional music is really part of our identity.
Yeah.
So it's not only about the government, we cannot blame one thing. It's quite complex, and what we can do in the grassroots level is to even play it on a daily basis, for example. And and this is going to be bridging from identity to the market. As we can see in Indonesia, there are a lot of DJs or even music composers combining Indonesian traditional music and EDM, something like that. And they said that they're aiming to bring it closer to the next generation who is more exposed to the modern music. But how do you see our people treat our traditional music compared to the modern ones and also the traditional ones?
As I mentioned, people nowadays is very actually there's a very interesting situation here. People might assume that our youngster, the what do you call those generation, the generation or even the generation, they're all oriented towards Western life. No, not all of them. Yeah, they have behind their brain, they have awareness of keeping their own cultural identity. Now, of course, not all of them. Yeah, you can see now there is like an interest, very strong interest among the youngster. In traditional music, and also among the artists that already basically overwhelmed with all the Western music idiom. Yeah. As you mentioned, even our DJ now trying to dig out something from tradition. Yeah, especially those who has international experience, because I have an orchestra consisting of all traditional instruments. When we perform abroad, I sometimes perform in the concert hall. They have one condition. They said, I don't want you to use any Western instrument. Wow, I said, okay. So, find me thing, because my orchestra, although I do sometimes use like guitar or bass, but they specifically want to see the originality. That's the demand in the market, global market. And also, those who, you can ask all our, I know very few young DJs. They're trying to incorporate traditional, music into their music. It's a their music still. One thing, for instance, like I'm going to have this Kojek. Kojek is a rap of Betawi. Yeah, very interesting. I mean, they're using rap, but they still he's still aware that the Betawi musical ingredient is very important to develop not only identity but his selling point is very important. We thought that ingredient, we thought the component, he will be the same like any other DJ. But since he's corporate, that he has he become very unique. Then he become like representative of our cultural life, especially Betawi dalam hal ini.
Okay.
That's there.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
I would like to imagine myself, for example, I'm a conservative person and talking about this incorporation and mixing our traditional music. How far can we mix it with the modern one until some people said it's not traditional anymore?
Wow, this is, your question is actually very crucial. All of your questions I can develop into a topic in a paper. That is the challenge, combining traditional music and modern music is not as easy as people a lot of think. Yeah? A lot of people say, let's do collaboration and just put it together. And no, it doesn't work like that, you know, it doesn't work automatically, because those elements live in two different nature. Western music is one nature, traditional music is another nature. They both cannot be easily mixed, you know, because they both have their own system, musical system. So you have to know each of their history, and then you can see through that, you can see where is the meeting point, where is the encounter, well, how can you combine? You cannot just combine everything just like that, you know. You have to choose which element that you can use to develop your new what's so called hybrid kind of, that actually the challenge. And unfortunately, in order to do that, you have to study whole. You have to study Western music, you have to study traditional music. You cannot be just a practitioner and use that as you like it. Yeah, you can do it, of course, yeah. But very rarely you're successful in doing that, you know. And it can easily fall into what's called artificiality. Yeah, it's become really shallow. It become like a simple-minded kind of, you know, act. Yeah. So that's the dangers of combining those two traditions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have been using the word tradition, and if you ask people, maybe specifically Indonesian, could you name me one music instrument? They will be talking about guitar, talking about piano, but if they are they need to be specifically asked. Tell me the traditional music instrument from Indonesia. Then their mind will be about kecapi, suling, something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The word traditional, the word exotic, the word local, should we keep it or should we remove it?
Wow, that's another very crucial issue. The term is, of course, very crucial. Yeah? The way, for the same thing, if you use two different terms, it can have two different effects. Yeah? Traditional, I have to admit, doesn't sound, proper anymore. Yeah, that's why I rarely use, in my festival, I rarely use traditional music festival. In the 80s, we still use it. Festa music traditional music, or all the government use traditional music concert, even now. But actually, we have to find a new term, yeah. The best term, I don't say this is what we have to do it. I'm using the term world music, because I have to follow the market kind of term. Yeah, if I use the world music doesn't always have to be traditional. Yeah? So, because if you say traditional music, that means you are really traditional music. And if you do it, let's say, in the outside of your country, outside of your environment, they will say, oh, that's your traditional music, and that's your business. I have no obligation whatsoever to support you, because that's your tradition, the traditional. But if you use world music, that's a different story. And then, because in world, world music, then it's okay, world, I'm part of the world, so maybe your music is part of my concern too. But once you use traditional music, they say, oh, that's your tradition. It's none of our business. You take care of your own tradition. That's really the challenge. That's why we have to think what would be the better term for using or naming or whatever traditional music, yeah. Within our context, maybe it's okay. It's clear. It's much clearer rather than world music. What is it? But traditional music, we know traditional music. In our context, I mean in local, national, it's okay. But when we go abroad, that's another story. Because once this music being brought abroad is basically a market. No more your own playground. It's already a market. And in market, I like it, I pay. Yeah, I pay because I like it. That's the thing. So that once we bring our traditional, whatever, music culture abroad, we have to be careful in branding that product. That's the challenge.
Okay. And apart from branding, in bringing our music to the world, what are the other challenges that you faced?
That's a very, very tricky question. Many challenges, but I'm so happy now, as I mentioned to you, this is the this year is the 50 years anniversary of my career as a musician, composer, scholar, everything. I have no complaint whatsoever. Yeah, I had to go through all the very complex word, of course, yeah. Issue, challenge, everything. But I enjoy it very much. That's why I become a musician. I have many challenges, yeah. But now I have to convince. Now we have the law, yeah, the law, undang-undang pemajuan kebudayaan, yeah. That's a law. Every single like government body, yeah, in the whichever level in the kabupaten, they have to act according to the law. There is a law to develop culture in your own backyard, yeah. So in the state level, the central level, let's put it that way, we already have that kind of awareness. But in the local level, in the regional level, they might not necessarily do that. I still have a lot of, I've been hearing a lot, a local musicians, for instance, they've been surhat, yeah, they've been complaining because the local government treating them like a beggar, basically, asking for money, something like that. Nowadays, before the law was exists, maybe, yeah, but now there is a law. So every one of us, I mean the government especially, have to act according to that law. They have responsibility to develop their cultural, the culture in the region. Of course, one of them is by nurturing the local artists there, local musicians. They have to support. Not because only that obligation, because if we support the local musician, they can have access to the global market. If they're ready, this is the thing. I'm trying to develop also a workshop, something like that, because they need to be empowered. Of course, the regional artists, they need to be guided. Yeah. So that's why I'm trying to work this with the ministry level or the provincial level, and also even the kabupaten level. I'm going there, trying to convince them. This is your asset, actually. Your tradition can make not only money, but can make your destination, your area, your city become famous, because they are basically bringing your culture and they're introducing your city, something like that. So this is my challenge. But of course, I only have so much energy, yeah, and capacity. So I just do my best, you know, whatever close to me, whatever. Whoever, you know, willing to listen my ideas, to accept my ideas, I'll do it.
Okay.
I'm trying now to combine, to convince actually the Ministry of Creative Economy, because now they have a big responsibility to actually to get revenue, to be able to export our music abroad. That's the biggest challenge.
All right, and we wish that challenge will be overcame, not only by the government, but by everyone, not only musicians, but also the people themselves, the people of Indonesia,
yeah,
also,
yeah,
support,
yeah,
this in this challenge. And now, let's talk about the upcoming event that you,
oh, yeah,
the video. In the video we played earlier, I saw the lineup, a lot of mixture. We have Keroncong, we have Mother One,
yeah,
we have Kojek.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, this is now what so far I mentioned to you. This regard Jakarta Beat Society, we did it with the Jakarta Tourism and Creative Economy Board 2019. Stop now, we revive it again. So basically, this is might be the only world music festival run by government. In this case, of course, the Jakarta government. Yeah, most of the festival are run by private, basically, and of course private. The main thing is trying to get profit, yeah. But the government is different. As I mentioned to you, government has the obligation to remind us all the time that we have this own culture. Yeah. And yet, of course, the government also has responsibility to develop our indigenous culture so they can survive. You know, so the government doesn't have to support them all the time. It's impossible. Yeah, these people, this musician, has to be major. Yeah, but in order to do that, the government support them first, the first level. So this is what we are doing with Jakarta Creative Economy Board, yeah. Particularly, so Jakarta Beat Society is a festival of wood with April 24 to 27 in Jakarta, in Lapangan Banteng. Yeah. It's a festival, but it's also a showcase. Showcase meaning we invite buyers, we invite promoters, we invite festival directors, we invite publisher, we invite collective body to come and to talk to the musician, and then we present the musician, and then we let the musician talk to them directly, even in the marketing, what to sell your products to them. So convince them that your music is good, so they can invite you to their festival. And once you get invited abroad in the festival, that's how basically what you have to do. And every year, like what I'm doing with my Indonesian National Orchestra, we're touring every year, you know. So a lot of people abroad are interested in having us performing. And then we can, you know, not only promoting our culture, but we can live as a professional musician with traditional music. Don't get it wrong. This is traditional music, my ensemble. Although the music is not traditional only, I developed from tradition to become a modern musician.
Okay, so in here we can see all the aspects of Indonesian music, not only the music, the musical instrument, but also the market, and of course the musicians itself also needed to be supported to get access to a greater market, both in Indonesia and abroad. Yeah. And with that, we hope that our music, Indonesian music, can get to the next level. Okay, thank you very much, Mas Frankie Radin. It's been a very nice talk with you. We wish that the event will be successful, and as we wish once again, Indonesian music can go to the next level. Thank you very much, Mas Frankie.
Thank you so much. We need your support for sure, especially Voice of Indonesia, and of course the state-owned radio RFI. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everyone who listened to this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mas Frankie. And listen, that's our talk about bringing Indonesian music to the next level. And you can listen to this again on our YouTube channel, VOI Official. Stay tuned on our radio service, Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast via shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz, and via streaming on voinews.id and RRE Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Indonesia, jangan pernah tertolak.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast. Please give us some inputs to our VOA listeners at gmail.com, the comment section of RRE Digital Mobile App, and also our social media accounts, Facebook The Voice of Indonesia, Instagram, TikTok, VOI_official. And you can listen to our talks at VOI on our YouTube channel, VOI Official. Our broadcast is still available on voanews.id, RRE Digital, and the frequencies 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Stay tuned on RRWA Service, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Voice of Indonesia 的华语节目。本台播送来自印度尼西亚的新闻、信息和娱乐。您能每天通过短波频率33255千赫和47550千赫。本台的网站 www.voanews.id/mandarin 的流媒体直播以及 RRE Digital 应用程序收听本台的节目 Voice of Indonesia 从印度尼西亚面向世界。各位师傅的这些聪明的那些明星世界听众朋友您好，我诺法祝你身体健康，天天开心。在今天那个小时的华语节目，我想为您报道一些印度尼西亚的信息，其中这一师相关废物管理成为优先事项，使印度尼西亚政府制定综合战略。本台还会播放一些在印度尼西亚流行的歌曲，其中支持伊斯兰宗教的歌曲，还有印度尼西亚美丽，是给你介绍印度尼西亚各地区的土的。好吧，开始本期的节目，请各位收听新闻报道。Voice of Indonesia 从印度尼西亚面向世界，现在报道新闻。 Indonesia 各地区的 Live 提问题是 Prabowo Subianto 冲动关心和优先考虑的问题。2025年3月12日七组世事和区域发展统筹部长 Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono Jayajaya 的杜理工与红百内阁部分部长举行有限会议后发表新闻声明时转达了作为解决垃圾问题的七里步骤 Prabowo Subianto 总统已经下令了成立一个驾驶全国垃圾管理工作组，还其实说这工作组将重点关注基础实施和基于基础的政策的事实，而其的任务是基于环保基础的电能的2018年第35号冲动条例苹果被制定为废物管理重点城市的12个城市。当然这个工作组将评估迄今为止的进展情况，有2018年第35号冲动条例，这一位置已经运行了大约7年，已经确定的印度尼西亚有12个城市必须重点关注类似的处理，甚至希望能够将垃圾转化为能源。除了组建国家废物处理加速工作组之外， Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono 还表示提高公众对废物处理问题的认识和关注也很重要，其中这一就是从小在学校加强对废物管理的教育和社会化。 Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono 解释说，印度尼西亚政府还将注重实施技术，并加强从上游到下游处理废物的基础事实。 Agus Yudhoyono 还表示，作为国家努力的一部分，政府还将发起一项全国性的运动，显示一个没有垃圾的清洁印度尼西亚，以提高公众意识，确保垃圾管理可持续的进行。3月12日，印度尼西亚外交部长苏比奥诺在印度尼西亚外交部接见了马来西亚驻印度尼西亚共和国大使Sheikh Muhammad Tasrin Tengku Hassan， 两人讨论了边界谈判进展、经济合作、东盟、巴勒斯坦问题等等两国双边关系中的几个重要热点的问题。苏吉尔外交部长对印度尼西亚与马来西亚目前正在进行的海上和陆地边界谈判的进展表示赞赏，并表示致力于继续尚未完成的谈判进程。在经济合作领域，外交部长苏吉奥诺对印度尼西亚与马来西亚关系的未来表示乐观。马来西亚在印度尼西亚的一些投资项目，如巴达米纳和 Petronas 的合作，也有在中立澳与提上的合作。马来西亚是东南亚第一次大投资国，2023年投资额达到41亿美元。除了讨论双边议题以外，两位也讨论了东盟议题。在这方面，外交部长苏吉奥诺转达了印度尼西亚支持马来西亚担任2025年东盟轮值主席国的承诺。此外，外交部长苏吉奥诺和马来西亚驻印度尼西亚大使Sheikh Muhammad Tasrin Tengku Hussein 讨论了巴勒斯坦问题，双方重申两国坚定致力于解决巴勒斯坦问题，包括通过永久停火和两国解决方案。马来西亚是印度尼西亚重要合作伙伴，也是印度尼西亚最近的邻国。印度尼西亚与马来西亚外交关系已经有68年了。
以及至2025年4月印度尼西亚全国大米产量降低七年出现盈余约为280万至300万吨。这是农业部副部长苏达里诺3月12日在雅加达都立公会见帕布沃苏比安多总统后向媒体发表的声明中转达了这一点。苏达里诺表示帕布沃苏比安多